Good morning and welcome to the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. This morning I am delighted and honored on Christmas morning to welcome Cardinal Justin Regali. I guess the proper term is Justin Cardinal Regali. That's always confused me. Formerly of Philadelphia, St. Louis, and now a resident of Knoxville. Welcome.
It's a joy to be here.
What a pleasure to have, first of all, have you on the show. I'll admit right up front that I'm Catholic, although this isn't going to be a Catholic show. We're going to talk about religion and East Tennessee and life in general and Christmas in general. But why are you in Knoxville?
Why am I in Knoxville? Well, I just retired as the Archbishop of Philadelphia after 8 years there, and Bishop Sticca, who has been a friend of mine for years, he offered me hospitality here in Knoxville. So I took him up on it, and I'm very happy to be a guest in his residence. And so that's why I came to Knoxville.
Now, what kind of precedent is there for a retired archbishop or cardinal to move elsewhere or to just, you know, you can go wherever you want, I guess, right?
Yes, there's no limitation. This turned out to be a very fine invitation.
Yeah. And I find East Tennessee to be extremely welcoming myself.
Well, since I've been here, the people have been so welcoming and hospitable. So I certainly am very fortunate.
Wonderful. You've been here since, I guess, early fall, right?
I came here on the 2nd of October.
Oh, okay.
So it's been a little over
a few months.
About 6 weeks.
And they had a nice big welcome for you at our airport when you came to
town.
They
did. I was impressed. And some of the children that were there, some of the young people, they waited a long time because my plane was late. And notwithstanding, they were kind enough to wait for me. So I appreciate that extra special.
Now, those of us who have been attendance at some of the other diocesan events throughout Knoxville, I've seen you before. You've been here a number of times over the course of the time that your friend Bishop Sticca has been our bishop here in East Tennessee. I mean, we saw you at his ordination. We've seen you at his anniversary mass and a couple of other events as well.
Well, yes, the big event was when he was ordained a bishop in March. It will be 3 years this coming March. I was the one that ordained him a bishop. And then I did come back for his 25th anniversary as a priest. So,
yeah.
And now I'm here permanently.
Well, a lot of people do come to East Tennessee to retire, but I don't sense that you're just going to be sitting back and watching TV all day. You're going to be active. I've already established for you on the diocesan website a Cardinal Regali page and a way to contact you and get in touch. Obviously, I was able to contact you.
Yes. I certainly will have a series of activities, which I have to work out. But these also include my contacts in Rome. I have various meetings in Rome, so I'm there rather frequently to take part in the meetings of the Congregation for Bishops there. Mm-hmm. So that gives me, that's an important part of my activities, and then I will be meeting with people and giving retreats after I work out my schedule for the future.
Sure. Now, speaking of Rome, and I'm trying to get most of the Catholic stuff out of the way early so we can talk about Christmas and Christianity and people of other faiths as well. But you had a very good rapport with the late Pope John Paul II. In fact, he came to St. Louis when you were the big man there because of his relationship with you. Tell us a little bit about a man who is very likely to be a saint someday.
Well, yes, I was very blessed. I was actually in Rome under four popes. I worked for three of them, but I was in Rome under four. And one of them was, of course, John Paul II. So I knew him. I worked with him for years.
So you would have known him then when he was still a cardinal?
No. I had met him, but just met him. No,
right.
No, I got to know the Pope the day after he was elected because I was in the Vatican at that time working as the director of the English language department in the papal secretariat, and the Pope was just elected. So he kind of inherited me as part of his team. And then I worked with him for years until I left Rome. I left Rome in 1994, so that was 16 years after he was elected. So basically, I was with John Paul II for 16 years. I had the immense privilege of traveling with him all over the world. I was part of his team, and therefore we went to all the English-speaking countries. And the first time that I was ever in Philadelphia, which was in 1979, the very first time in my life, I was there because I accompanied him.
I was there.
You were there?
I went.
Terrific.
I went to a big outdoor mass.
Yes.
I was there.
Yes, that was in October of 1979. We were both younger at that time.
Yeah, I remember after the mass, some friends and I went Pope hunting, and I think there's a seminary, the name of which escapes me right now.
St. Charles.
But we St. Charles Borromeo.
Yeah.
Okay, I should know that. We were there, and we stood on the driveway, and the Pope drove right by us, and we were very excited because he then got out of the car and went into the building. We're like, wait.
Yes. So anyway, during all those years, I was very close to Pope John Paul II, and I was able to see him for what he was, this extraordinary human being, this great person that was so compassionate, so taken by human dignity, and he was so devoted to human rights and to the message of Christianity. And he was this good shepherd who had time and love, not only for the Catholic people, but for all Christians and people of all religions. And that was certainly a very important part of his ministry for all the years of his pontificate, 26 and a half years.
We're talking with Justin Cardinal Regali, the retired cardinal from Philadelphia and St. Louis, who now has taken up his retirement in our beautiful town of Knoxville, about John Paul II, who will really probably go down in history as one of the most forgiving people. He'll always be known as the man who forgave his assassin. That takes a lot to do that.
Yes, yes. The Pope, he underwent this attempt on his life, and it was very serious. I was right there in St. Peter's Square at the time that it happened. I was waiting for him because I was part of his team and was scheduled to make announcements that the very day that he was shot, which was May the 13th, 1981. And that was a Wednesday afternoon, and within hours after his operation, after the surgery, he recorded in a very weak voice, he recorded his message to the world, which was a message that he, on his part, was willing to forgive, he called him the brother that shot him.
Wow.
And there's a very famous picture which everybody's seen. It was on the front of the magazines of the Pope sitting in a little chair, a small chair, in the prison cell with this man, Alyosha, and they're speaking. Now, later on, actually, the Pope, during the time that he visited with this man, whom he was willing to forgive from the very moment, unfortunately, the man himself never showed any signs of remorse.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, he asked the Pope one thing that he was very interested in. He said to the Pope, "I shot you," and it was very clear. He says, "Why didn't you die?"
Mm.
And that was his great preoccupation, to know what it was.
What did I do wrong, is what the villain was thinking.
But also, what force was there that was protecting you? How could you possibly have been protected from my bullets?
Wow.
But unfortunately, with those observations, there was nothing, no indication that he had any remorse or that he was sorry at all.
Now, of course, forgiveness is a theme throughout all of Christianity. I mean, it's the key point in the Lord's Prayer that that Jesus himself gave us.
Beautiful.
And I struggle with this myself because I see it's easy to talk about others more so than myself. But you see, especially, let's say, on a someone has committed murder, someone has pick a news story in our local newspaper. And I look at the comment section, and it seems like the first comment is always, that person should not be allowed to live. And, you know, and I know these people are writing anonymously into the newspaper on the website, but for some reason, that gets under my skin and irritates me because I'm thinking, you know, there's nothing Christian in that statement to say that it doesn't matter if they stole the lady who stole money out of her employer and then ran off to some other part of the country. They should not be allowed to live, it says on there. People write that as a comment on a public forum, and it just seems to me to be the opposite of forgiveness. I mean,
you mentioned that it's not Christian, but it's also not human, because humanity, all of us have our weaknesses. People make mistakes, serious mistakes. But part of our profound conviction as human beings is that our humanity is so important, is such a gift, that even a person that has failed, even a person that has committed a crime, has sinned grievously, that the dignity of that human person is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And the world just doesn't go forward without the willingness to forgive. Now, obviously, for forgiveness to enter into a person's heart, a person must accept that. And so the Pope, Pope John Paul II, he offered forgiveness immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But the man himself has to accept.
Right.
And that's what God does. God offers us forgiveness for our sins, and thank God he does. And how important this is for us, how important it is in society, how important it is in the family, that we don't keep grudges.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we do, there is no final good result of this.
Yeah.
All we do is get closer to total alienation, and this removes us from our humanity.
That's true. I mean, you think about it with every married couple, with every, you know, parent situation, just your siblings. If you're not able to, because your siblings can say the meanest things sometimes, you know, the people who are closest to you are the ones who can hurt the most. And if you can't forgive them, you can't move on with the relationship.
Well, you mentioned previously the Our Father, the Lord's Prayer. Jesus himself taught his followers to say, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." In other words, if we're asking for forgiveness, and we are, all of us, who is it in this in this world that has not offended in some way at some time, also seriously? But if we ask for forgiveness, the Lord tells us that this is dependent on the fact that we are willing to forgive. But look at the effect that this has on the world. The refusal to forgive is one thing. But the willingness on the part of people to begin over again, it takes effort. It takes tremendous effort. But the fact is, and it takes time too sometimes, but this is our goal, to be forgiven, but also to forgive those who trespass against us.
It took me a while to figure out that the word "as" in the Lord's Prayer doesn't mean while. It means in the manner of. You know, forgive us the trespasses, the way we forgive those. In other words, we have to forgive in order to be forgiven. It's not like, well, I'll forgive you at the same time you're going to forgive me and we're all washed up and even. There's that word "as" has such more meaning to it than just the little two letters that it is.
Absolutely.
We're speaking with Cardinal Justin Regali, who has retired to East Tennessee on Christmas. Merry Christmas again, by the way.
Thank you.
And I appreciate the gift of a rosary that you've shared with me. And it's got your insignia, your emblem.
That's correct.
And it's got a Latin phrase on it. And maybe you'd tell us what that Latin phrase is.
Sure. The Latin phrase is verbum caro factum est. It comes from the first chapter of the Holy Gospel according to John. And it is the great good news that God announced to the world, namely that the Word became flesh. In other words, in God's great love, he decided to send his Son, the second person of the Most Blessed Trinity, the second person, his Son, in the communion of the eternal communion of the deity, to send him into the world. And he sent him into the world to take flesh in the womb of the Virgin Mary. And that's what Christmas is.
Mm-hmm.
It is the great feast of the coming of God's Son, because we're told also in the Gospel of St. John that God so loved the world that he sent his only Son.
Mm-hmm.
So the coming of God's only Son into the world is an expression of the love of the Father. And he comes in order to take our humanity. In other words, look what this means. It means that God, who is eternal, who is above all things, who is transcendent, he wants to speak to us in a language that we understand. And the language that we understand is the language of humanity, flesh, blood.
Mm-hmm.
And so his Son, the eternal Son of God, takes flesh in the womb of the Virgin Mary, and he speaks to us through his humanity. But he also tells us, by taking that God himself assumes humanity, the meaning of Christmas, it shows what God thinks of humanity. It shows us the value of flesh.
Yes.
That today, in so many ways, the human person, the rights of the human person from the moment of conception to the moment of natural death, is worthy of this respect. Why? Because he is a person. He is a human being. And this flesh and blood is so important and so valuable and so loved by God that he himself had his Son take on this human flesh. And he speaks to us. And that's why Christmas has such an endearing message, because it is the child. But it's not just emotion. It certainly is the best of emotion. But not only that, it's that God becomes a child in order to identify with all humanity mm-hmm. to go through the step.
He could have taken the easy route. He could have just showed up like a magic trick, but he chose not to. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It wasn't that he created humanity. No, he assumed humanity in the womb yeah. of the Virgin Mary. And although it was a very special conception and birth, nevertheless, he went through birth just as anyone else. And every stage of life as a young child in the arms of his mother until he offered his life in sacrifice on the cross. Mm. This is God's love for us. And that's what Christmas is all about. It's God's love seen in humanity, but it's also this powerful message mm-hmm. of the value of all human life. And because God has assumed humanity, we must not defile it. We must not in any way offend humanity.
Well, it goes back to what I was thinking about the people who say so-and-so does not deserve to live because whatever crime, whatever they stole or whatever they did, the disrespect for life is right there, evident in black and white on that webpage.
People deserving things is one thing, but the value of humanity mm-hmm. in the world, and therefore, getting back to Pope John Paul II, who was this great apostle of human dignity, because he went for 26 and a half years as Pope, he went all through the world proclaiming the dignity of the human person, the value of the child in the womb, the value of the elderly person, the value of people that are suffering. How many times was he close to the sick? He knew what pain was, and he encouraged people to be able, as human beings, to accept pain. And then when it came to him, when his hour came, he supported pain and suffering with tremendous dignity because he knew that it was the human being.
Well, twice when he was shot and then again later when he had Parkinson's, right? He accepted pain in that way.
Oh, yes. And when he was elected, he was so strong and young and vibrant.
Mm-hmm. The skiing pope.
He was that. But then when he had no more energy, after he had given everything to the world, all his energy, after he had made mm-hmm. 104 international visits around the world, after he had visited all throughout Italy, after he'd come to the United States 7 times as Pope, after all of this, when he ran out of energy and was infirm, then he submitted himself to God's will, mm-hmm. and at that time gave the beautiful example, once again, of how genuine he was. What you saw is what you got.
We're talking with Cardinal Justin Regali, who is now a resident of the Diocese of Knoxville and is retired from his archbishoping that he's done. It is Christmas morning, and you know, we talked about the important message of Christianity. Random question, what's your favorite Christmas song?
Adeste Fidelis.
Ah.
Come all ye faithful.
Good choice.
No, all of these songs are an expression of joy, and it depends on the culture of the people. All throughout the world, in so many different countries, there are so many different manifestations. This people has this expression, but they're also so worthy of respect because there's something native to each group, and it expresses the joy and the faith of these people before the great event of the birth of Jesus Christ.
Well, in the classic literature, A Charlie Brown Christmas, Linus and Charlie Brown bemoan the commercialization of Christmas. And, you know, I know working at a commercial radio station, we're as much a part of it as anybody, but the Christmas songs, the quote-unquote Christmas songs that we play, are mostly Santa and Frosty and Rudolph and very secular type of stuff. This is not a new problem, the secularization of Christmas, but maybe you could give me a minute of your thoughts on that and how Christmas plays into the economy of the world and how Christianity plays into – we were talking about the day-to-day life that we have to deal with, things like, you know, we have to deal with money, we have to deal with taxes, we have to deal with all these things.
Sure. First of all, we have to go back to what is Christmas? Christmas is the celebration of the great gift that God gives to the world. And that great gift is his Son, our Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of God who comes into the world, takes flesh. So this Christmas is by its very nature a gift. And therefore, over the centuries, it is not at all amazing or improper that people have wanted to give gifts. Mm-hmm. They wanted to give gifts as an expression of love. The way God gives gifts as an expression of his love, he gives the gift of his Son. So, obviously, this principle is something that is excellent, is beautiful. And some people even have Christmas, they begin their gift-giving on the Feast of St. Nicholas, December the 6th.
In the shoes. You put your shoes out and you get a little treat.
Yes. But, however, what we have to guard against is an excessive dimension of this. We have to make sure that in giving gifts, we don't forget what the real meaning of Christmas is. The fact that it is the gift of God the Father, of His Son, and therefore what we have to do as certainly as Christian people, we have to communicate this great gift to the world and bear witness to our faith. Mm-hmm. Bear witness to our faith, and with those who are not Christians, we bear witness to the teaching of Christ, the teaching on human dignity, the teaching on human rights, all of this, which is acceptable to all those who are Christian or non-Christians.
So even the light-up inflatable nativity set on somebody's front lawn is their public expression of their faith, or even, you know, to get to the point where the Santa decorations, to a certain degree, shows outwardly that they believe in Christmas.
Yes, just so we don't overemphasize and at the same time underemphasize the full meaning. It's important that society as such recognize this and show its enthusiasm, its love, and its joy at the birth of the Savior.
Mm-hmm.
But it remains, the meaning of Christmas is the expression of God's great gift to the world, His Son, our Lord Jesus Christ.
Now, we're talking with Cardinal Justin Regali on this Christmas morning, and you're now new to Tennessee, and like me, you lived in some heavily Catholic areas, Los Angeles, St. Louis, Philadelphia, places like that. Because I'm of the generation after which John Kennedy was already elected president, it didn't really occur to me that there'd be any still anti-Catholic type of bias left in the world. I was watching a show about prohibition, and they said, well, Al Smith couldn't get elected because he was Catholic. And I really never occurred to me that. And they talked about the KKK campaigned against Al Smith because he was Catholic. And JFK, I know from reading history, that had to deal with that. I guess it's in some ways it's come back around. There are people running for president whose religion is being called into question because they're Mormon or because they're evangelical, because they're what, even our current president, his religion got called into question too.
Well, certainly a person has the right to practice the religion of his conscience, and that's extremely important. And it is important for the entire nation, for the world, not to put any type of limitations on this freedom. So the free practice of religion from the very beginning, from the days of our founding fathers, it was that religion would not be imposed on people and that religion would not be coerced.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about the recognition of human rights, because freedom of religion is one right. It's extremely important. But also the right to life. It is extremely important. The right to be born is important.
It's right in there. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness.
Pursuit of happiness.
It's in the Declaration.
Absolutely. Yeah. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And therefore, it is important that people have the right to bring up their families, the right to send their children to the school of their choice, the right to express themselves, and the right not to be persecuted. Also, for example, in healthcare, what an important thing this is. People have the right not to be coerced to take part in procedures that their conscience is against.
Well, this has become an issue for the charities that are run by the Catholic Church that are helping. Let's say there's some situations where victims of human trafficking have been helped through Catholic-run organizations, and those organizations are losing their funding because they're affiliated with the Catholic Church. That's happened a couple of places around this country. That's, I think, exactly what you're talking about.
Certainly there are agencies, charitable agencies, whether they're Catholic or of other persuasions, that at times are being coerced to follow certain guidelines which are against the conscience.
Mm-hmm.
This is a dead-end street. If America goes down this street, we're not going to make it. We're not going to make it because we were founded the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to take this other approach and coerce people against their conscience. So today, the idea of human liberty has a new brilliance to it, because we see that without human freedom, without the exercise of freedom, without being able to express yourself in true freedom, that the country itself, society, will suffer enormously.
Well, we see also, now flipping it a little bit, how people have had an anti-Muslim bias since 2011, assuming that all Muslims are radical terrorists, which is not the case, obviously. You know, and I took a class through the FBI locally here in Knoxville where they compared radical Islam in a way to the KKK. I said the KKK were religious terrorists of their time, much like you don't indict all Christians because of the actions of the KKK. We're able to separate them. But let's take a moment on Christmas to talk about non-Christians and their part in our culture and in our world and how, you know, we should treat people of someone whose faith is completely antithetical to our own.
Well, first of all, we begin out with the fact that all people of any faith or of no faith, people that believe in God, people that do not believe in God, they have this innate human dignity because they are, whether they acknowledge it or not, they are children of God. And the reflection of God's own being in the intellect and the will and the soul, all of this, the reflection of God gives them a dignity that must be respected, regardless of what religion they profess. Mm-hmm. And what you just mentioned is so important. The fact that an individual Christian, an individual Muslim, an individual Jew, an individual person of anything, that the people have their own responsibility, but we must be careful of stereotyping people. And in the past, America, the United States, has had a problem, mm-hmm. a big problem, the big problem of racism, for example, which is not completely extirpated, not completely rooted out. There are so many different groups, ethnic groups, religious groups, people of different status that are discriminated against. And this has nothing to do with true humanity. And therefore, this is a tremendous challenge to extirpate this. John Paul II, you know, when he came to the United States, he came to St. Louis and he talked about the history of St. Louis. I was the Archbishop at the time. And he talked about the Dred Scott decision. The Dred Scott decision was a decision of the Supreme Court in which the Supreme Court upheld the fact at that time, that people of African descent had no rights whatsoever. And John Paul II said, after many, many years, after enormous suffering, he says, that situation has been rectified, at least to a great extent. However, he says, that was what was done with the permission of the highest court of the United States, the decreed, so what is legal is not necessarily correct, moral, right. And he says there is today another whole category of persons, another category. At that time, it was the people of African descent. Now it is the category of the unborn. They don't have any rights. They don't have any rights because they are declared to be without rights. And he says we must be aware of producing, first of all, of the evil that we do in violating the dignity of the unborn, he says, but also in setting up another situation where in the future, with immense suffering and with immense pain, that we'll be able to recognize what has been done against human beings.
So actually, history gives us hope for the future.
History gives us an indication of how we can avoid things. Mm-hmm. But history, by tipping us off, if we read the signs of the times, if we are savvy enough to realize that we can learn, but we have to realize that we don't know everything, then in that sense, history is very, very helpful to us. And it can help us enormously to go forward, to find the right way, to avoid all these pitfalls, to avoid all this evil, and to forestall all this suffering.
Well, our time has flown by with Christmas this morning. Cardinal Regali, we appreciate your time very much. Merry Christmas again.
Merry Christmas to you, Frank, and it's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm so happy to greet our listeners, and I'm so happy to be in their city. And
well, you're welcome to East Tennessee. We could go on for a while, but our time is up. So
thank you.
I appreciate you. Justin Cardinal Regali, former Archbishop of Philadelphia and St. Louis, and now a retiree here at East Tennessee, but still obviously very active and very involved in the in Christianity and in the church. Thank you again, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, Frank.
This is the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. We'll talk to you again next Sunday.